Hi there, this is the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour from True Confessions magazine. It's called The Lesson I Learned. Here's the story. Our town library is one of the favorite places to hang out. It always fills me with a sense of quiet and peace. Even though it's no longer noise-free, it still has a calming effect on me. And that afternoon, as I walked into the library, I was planning on staying a good long while because I was certainly in need of being calmed down. I had just had the misfortune of running into my ex-husband. Late last year, I had decided that I was definitely ready for Sam and me to start a family. We had been married for 6 years. We were both 32 years old, and I was ready to be a mom. We had been talking about it off and on for a while. Or now, looking back, I guess it was just me who was doing the talking, because while my biological clock was suddenly beginning to tick in loud overtime, a 20-year-old girl who had come to work in the law office where Sam worked was turning his head. While my mind was spinning with ideas for baby names, thoughts of turning the spare bedroom into a nursery, and plans for baby-proofing the condo, he was sneaking around with a 20-year-old. I finally caught on one cold, snowy winter evening when I was turning the gas logs on in the fireplace and making popcorn for us to enjoy while we watched a movie, or I hoped did some serious talking about starting our family. As I struggled in beside Sam, or snuggled, that is, beside Sam on the couch, he called me Michelle. My name is Lori. It had all come out then. He was dissatisfied with our marriage. He had come to the conclusion that we wanted very different things in life. He said he was too busy for kids. He needed to concentrate on his career as a lawyer, and that left no time for a family. And my nagging about wanting a baby, he had added, was causing more stress than he wanted to deal with. He wanted his freedom. He didn't want to be tied down to a marriage. The house with the white picket fence and a couple of little ones toddling around, which was all I could seem to think about these days, he'd said, was not his idea of what his life should be. He wanted out. Funny he didn't have time for a family, but he had time for an affair. Funny, too, that he had wanted to be free of the responsibilities and expectations of marriage, yet just seconds after the divorce was final, or so it seemed, he had married the 20-year-old. Over the next few months, as I had stewed over the breakup of our marriage, I was sincerely hoping that this child he had left our miscarriage for was morbidly obese and ugly as a fence post. But of course, as I had seen that afternoon, she was neither. She was gorgeous. She looked like a model. I had run into them as I was coming out of the yarn shop, and she and Sam were walking past. She looked like she was about a size 2, with beautiful blonde hair that fell practically to her bottom, and teeth that had practically blinded me with their whiteness. Sam, all smiles, was clinging to her as though he was afraid she was going to get away from him. She was smiling up at him as though he was her idea of perfection. And amid all that smiling and affection, I had been fighting hard to keep my tears in check as my eyes had dropped to the rounded tummy beneath her shirt. There was no doubt about it. She was pregnant. Tears were threatening again as I browsed through the new books section of the library. I was filled with so much hurt and I was so angry. What had happened to Sam's being too busy? What had happened to Sam's being too busy for a family, about wanting to concentrate all his time and energy on his career? He hadn't wanted children with me. But 2 seconds after he married his little Barbie doll, he was headed straight for fatherhood. And he hadn't even had the decency to look ashamed or to act as though he cared one tiny little bit about my feelings. He had looked at me as though I should be thrilled for him. My thoughts were suddenly interrupted by the sound of a cell phone. Frowning as I slid a book back onto the shelf, I wondered why it was that people couldn't seem to exist these days without their cell phones attached to their ears. Besides, wasn't there a sign on the door that asked library patrons to please turn their cell phones off? Taking a step back from the shelf, I peered down the aisle to see who the offender was, and I wasn't at all surprised to see that it was a man. Of course, men didn't care about breaking rules or hearts. And this particular man, I noticed, was being none too considerate of the people around him. He was yakking into the phone as if he was the only one in the library. Shaking my head in disgust, I pulled out another book and opened it. It was at that moment that the man, the rude, noisy, obnoxious one with the cell phone stuck to his ear, raced past me. His arm brushed my shoulder, startling me so that I lost my balance and fell to my knees. I wasn't hurt. The floor was carpeted, and I hadn't gone down that hard, but I was angry. What a jerk. And he hadn't even looked back to see if I was all right. He just kept on walking and talking his way out the door. Narrowing my eyes, I pulled myself to my feet, gathering up the books I had selected, mumbling something to the librarian about rude, disrespectful people. I checked the books out and left. There was no calmness or peace to be found in the library that day. As I stepped outside, the heat and humidity wrapped around me like a heavy blanket. I felt as though I had just stepped into a sauna. Checking the traffic, I hurried across the street to Lori's yarn shop, my shop. The first thing I had done after my marriage fell apart, knowing I needed a huge change in my life, was throw all my energy into going into business for myself. I love to knit, croquet, and quilt, and anywhere there's anything going on to do with yarn or fabric, you'll find me there. So when I heard that the yarn shop was going on the market, I grabbed it. I had been putting money aside for years for the big house that Sam, our children, and I would someday share. What better way to use that money as a down payment on the yarn shop, I reasoned. When I had been married to Sam, I had sometimes talked about owning my own business, but he'd been less than enthusiastic about the idea. According to him, it was a silly idea. Running my own business would be much too risky and more bother than it was worth. But I knew that it was the best thing I could have done. I had been working for many years as a loan officer in our local bank, and I had liked my job, but I really loved being my own boss. I enjoyed the people who came into my shop. I loved selling the gorgeous yarns and teaching people to create beautiful things that they could love and treasure for years. My classes were always full, and there was usually a waiting list of people who wanted to learn to knit or crochet. And my dream was to someday purchase the building next door if it ever became available and expand my business to include fabrics and everything needed for quilting. As I opened the door to the shop, three little balls of golden fur greeted me. That was the second thing I'd done after purchasing the shop. I had wanted a dog for such a long time, but Sam had convinced me that I didn't have time for one. I worked a full-time job, he reminded me. I was away from home all day. How could I possibly find time for a pet? He may have been right, but I knew now that I should have picked the dog over Sam. A dog would certainly have been more loyal. So with Sam's feelings on the subject no longer mattering, I had headed for the animal shelter. As I was walking in the door, a lady just ahead of me was bringing in three puppies. She said they were a golden retriever mix, and she just couldn't keep them. I stuck my face in the box to coo over them, and I was lost. They were the sweetest, most adorable little puppies I'd ever seen, and I took all three of them home with me. They were little girls, it turned out, and I named them Blanche, Rose, and Dorothy after my favorite TV show, The Golden Girls. With their honey-colored fur, they were indeed my golden girls, and I adored them. They snuggled with me at night and kissed me awake every morning. They romped and played and ate and slept, all under Mom's watchful eye. They were such a joy. They came to work with me every day, and my customers loved them, too. As much, I sometimes thought, as they did the yarns, I really can't imagine not having the girls. I sometimes see stories on TV about people who take in homeless, helpless animals and end up with dozens. It isn't too difficult to imagine going down that same path. How can you turn your back on a needy animal? Okay, girls, are you ready to go home? I asked them. It's getting close to supper time. Let's get your leashes. As I got them into the car and we headed for our condo a couple of miles outside of town, I checked the sky. Storms were predicted for our area that evening. The sky held not even a hint of bad weather, though. It was a sunny, beautiful, nearly cloudless late afternoon. I wasn't too far from home when out of the corner of my eye, I caught a glimpse of something moving. I slammed on the brakes. Sorry, girls, I said as they all slid forward a bit. What was that? And then I saw it. It's a puppy, I exclaimed. Oh, girls, look, I'll bet it's lost. Or someone dropped it off, I thought with disgust, to defend for itself. How cruel. Throwing the car into park, I got out and closed the door firmly so that my dogs wouldn't jump out after me. Then I moved cautiously toward the little dog. It looked like a little collie mixed puppy, and it was standing on the side of the road looking frightened and confused. Hey, baby, are you lost? I held out my hand to him. Can I help you? I wasn't sure what the dog would do. It might be frightened of me and turn and run in the opposite direction. It might think that I was a threat and lunge at me. I knew from my own dogs that puppies have extremely sharp teeth. I had no desire to have my hand chewed off. In the next instant, the puppy charged at me, but there was absolutely nothing menacing about it. Its little body was wagging with what looked to me to be pure joy at having someone pay attention to it. Reaching down, I scooped the dog up into my arms. Well, aren't you a sweetie? I cooed, thinking again that maybe I was already well on my way to being someone who shelters dozens of animals. Would you like to go home with us? Still wiggling joyfully, the puppy was licking my face with enthusiasm. I took a peek to see what I had there, and I began to laugh. It was a little girl, and I knew exactly what I was going to name her. Blanche, Rose, and Dorothy now had their Sophia. Rubbing my cheek against her soft fur, I said, "Well, Sophia, let's go home. I want you to get acquainted with the other girls. I know you're going to love them." And I was reaching for the door handle when a car sped past behind me. The driver obviously wasn't paying attention to the road because he had come within inches of hitting me. "Idiot," I shouted, "you stupid idiot." And then I saw the taillights come on. As the driver slammed on his brakes, a little wave of panic washed over me as the driver put the car in reverse. Had he heard me call him an idiot? Was he angry? Was he going to yell at me, or worse? Wanting to get Sophia and me out of harm's way, I reached again for the door handle. Before I could pull the door open, though, I took one more look at the man who was now getting out of his car. My eyes widened. "You!" It was the jerk from the library. "You're just a menace wherever you go. First you knock me down in the library, and now you almost run over me with your car. What's wrong with you?" He was looking at me as though he didn't understand a word of what I was saying. More likely, he probably just chose to not understand. "Well," I said, and despite the annoyance I heard in my voice, I couldn't help but notice what a good-looking man he was. He was tall and dark with big dark eyes and long lashes and dark curly hair. Under any other circumstance, I would have considered him gorgeous. Under other circumstances, I would have considered him a hunk. But these aren't other circumstances, I reminded myself, and I certainly am not going there. Sam was a handsome 6'4", blonde, with the most beautiful blue eyes I'd ever seen. Looks meant absolutely nothing. I wasn't giving any man, and especially this man, a second look. I had no intention of allowing myself to be vulnerable to any man ever again. Who needed it? Men meant aggravation and disappointments and broken hearts. From now on, it was my girls and me. Besides, this man seemed to really have a chip on his shoulder. He seemed to think he owned the world. He obviously made his own rules with no regard for anyone else. Too bad for him. With the mood I was in that day, he really didn't want to tangle with me. "You have nothing to say for yourself?" I pushed. "I'm sorry I didn't see you." "Didn't see me? You didn't see my car sitting here? Where are your eyes when you're driving?" I threw out. "Oh, I know. You were probably too busy talking on your cell phone to pay attention to the road or anyone who might be in it. I said I'm sorry, but could you..." "Hi, Naomi." "Naomi?" He was calling me Naomi? The man must be a nutcase. Was he dangerous? I backed up again, reaching for the door handle. "I think you've mistaken me for someone else." He moved closer to me. "That's my dog." A frown settled over my face. "Who named a dog Naomi?" Although with dogs named Blanche, Rose, and Dorothy, I supposed I didn't have a lot of room to talk. "I don't know how she got out. Why would I believe she's yours, just because you say so?" I cut him off. "You don't seem like a very responsible person to me." His eyes met mine, and he heaved a deep sigh. "I am. I really am." His shoulders seemed to sag a little. "It just hasn't been the best of days." "Yeah, well, if you'd slow down and taken the cell phone out of your ear, you'd probably be better off," I advised. "So I'll ask you again. How can I be sure this puppy belongs to you?" I had to be cautious. There had been talk around town in the past few weeks about dog nappers being in the area. People were being warned to keep an eye on their pets. Several of my customers had told me about seeing someone prowling around their backyards. My neighbor just called me and said he saw her out and, "Sorry, I don't know your neighbor. Did you get her at the animal shelter? I could call them to verify it." He shook his head. "No." His shoulders seemed to sag a little further. He was certainly working hard to convince me that he was oh so sad over losing his dog. I found her out on the highway. Someone had obviously dumped her off, and right, likely story. You're probably one of those dog nappers I've been hearing about. As they met mine, his dark eyes seemed to twitch with amusement. I glared at him. He thought this was funny? Turning, I put Sophia into the car with Blanche, Rose, and Dorothy. "Naomi, come," the man said. Sophia didn't move, which absolutely told me everything I needed to know. "I've only had her a few days," he was saying. "She just doesn't know her name yet. You need to get a life, Buster," I threw out as I climbed back into my car. "I should probably call the police and report you." Pulling a pen from my purse, I jotted down his license plate number. "Come on, you can't take my dog. I live just around the next corner. You can stop and see how I fenced in the backyard for her. I can go home," I thought, throwing the car into gear, wondering how stupid he thought I was. The yard he was talking about could be anyone's yard, one, in fact, that he had cased in the past few days, looking for animals to steal. I hit the gas pedal and drove off. "Men," I grumbled to myself. Was there an honest, responsible, decent one in the bunch? It certainly doesn't seem so. Looking in the rearview mirror, I saw him standing in the middle of the road, staring after me. I was too far away from him by then to see the expression on his face, but I wondered if he was committing to memory the make, color, and license plate of my car. He certainly wasn't happy with me. But I was happy with me. I had saved Sophia. She was going home with us, where she would be safe, secure, and happy. When we got home, I put the puppies in the backyard for some playtime. "Not too long, though," I told them. "It's too hot for you to be out for long. And with dog nappers in the area, I didn't leave them unattended. And with that awful man out there, perhaps looking for my car, certainly intending to grab Sophia and maybe my other three too, I wouldn't be taking my eyes off of them." As I watched them play together, I thought about calling the police station to check on that jerk that seemed to be everywhere that I was that day. Before I could reach for the phone, though, the puppies were whimpering to come back in. They had been out less than 5 minutes. I guess that was too long, though, because no sooner had I given them fresh water and their suppers than the phone rang. It was my cranky neighbor, a man, of course, from two condos down, calling to complain. "Now you have 4 dogs? Yesterday it was 3. What will it be tomorrow?" "You know the association rules," he reminded me. "You're not supposed to have more than 2 animals in your condo." Sighing heavily, I leaned against the kitchen counter. Yes, I knew the rules, and if I hadn't known, Mr. Parker would have been only too happy to explain them to me. An elderly gentleman who lived alone, he seemed to find great joy in finding fault with his neighbors. Another man who enjoyed ruining someone's perfectly good day. "So what are you going to do about all those dogs?" he wanted to know. "Are you just dog sitting for someone, which I don't think is allowed either? Or are they yours? You know what the rules say." Closing my eyes, I sank my teeth into my lower lip. In the weeks since I'd had the puppies, I had been diligent about cleaning up after them when they were outside, not wanting them to disturb the neighbors with their barking. I didn't leave them out for any extended length of time, and still Mr. Parker was finding fault. I will be bringing the matter up at our next association meeting, he was going on. We all need to follow the rules. Don't you agree? No one else here has four dogs. We all follow the rules. Sighing, I pressed my fingertips to my temples, where a headache was trying to settle. I knew it would only be a matter of time before someone from the association would be dropping by to have a word with me, and I would have to decide what was more important to me, my condo or my girls. I loved my condo, and I really hated to think about leaving it. I'd lived there for nearly 12 years, long before Sam and I were married. After Sam had left, I had repainted, repapered, and stenciled until it was a homey single girl's home. I had planted more perennials along the short walk that led to the street and planted a small tree in the front yard space. It was home, and for the most part, I had been happy there. But Mr. Parker was the nitpicker of all nitpickers. He had been a thorn in my side for a while. He complained if I left my garage door open longer than he thought it should be open. If I sat out on my patio with my CD player, he complained that my music was too loud. He complained if there were too many cars parked in front of my condo. He seemed to look for things to find fault with. If I had to leave my condo, I certainly wouldn't miss Mr. Parker. You know, girls, I think this world would be much better off if there were no men in it, I said as I searched the cupboards for something tasty to make for my supper. They cause more problems than they're worth. Mr. Parker is a perfect example. And Sam, too, I thought. I could look back now and see how he had tried to control me and how his temper would flare if I didn't agree with him. He had seemed to think that he was better equipped to make all the decisions, big or small. There had been an arrogance about him that had often made life difficult. He had usually wanted to choose the movies and restaurants we went to. He had wanted to pick out what kind of car I should drive. He had even wanted to choose the color of the car. He had been adamant about not wanting pets, so we didn't have pets. When I talked about having my own business, he had pooh-poohed the idea as though it wasn't even worth discussing. If something wasn't his idea, he really didn't want to hear about it. And I probably let him have his way more than I should have. I wondered now why I'd done that. I had lived on my own before marrying Sam, and I was used to handling problems and making my own decisions. So why hadn't I stood up for myself? He didn't own me. He wasn't my boss. Why had I so often caved and agreed to do things his way? It made life simpler, I supposed, and I had loved Sam so much. I had known from the first moment I laid eyes on him when he'd come into the bank for a car loan, that he was the man I wanted to spend the rest of my life with. From that day on, I couldn't have imagined a life without him. That we wouldn't grow old together had never crossed my mind. But it had obviously crossed his. It seemed that he'd had very little respect for me or for our marriage. I could look back now and see how self-centered and arrogant he was. Well, all of that was behind me now, and I was on my own again, and I was fine. And since I had my shop and my little family, my life was better than fine. As I began cutting up vegetables for a salad, I knew I had to bring my thoughts back to Mr. Parker. He wasn't going to let this drop. I would be forced to choose between my condo and my dogs. So I'll be moving, I thought as I sat down at the table with the salad and the glass of iced tea. The question is, where? An apartment certainly wouldn't allow for allow 4 dogs or a yard for them to play in. I still have a small mortgage on the condo and a larger one on the shop. With the slow economy, there's no telling how long it might take for the condo to sell, and I probably wouldn't get out of it what it's worth. How could I buy another place? There was no way that I could afford to carry another mortgage. The one on the shop alone was... Wait a minute. My breath caught in my throat. I was having a light bulb moment. I had bought the old building in which my shop was located. The upstairs had, at one time, according to the realtor, been used as an apartment. From the looks of it, probably many decades ago. In recent years, it had been used for storage. On my initial walkthrough of the building, I'd taken one wincing look at the space and designated it to someday, not needing the extra space anyway. I had pretty much put it out of my mind. Besides, there had been other things to occupy my mind, such as getting over a divorce and getting my shop up and running. But what I remembered was that the space had been dark and dingy and that it smelled musty. But with lots of elbow grease and maybe not too much expense, I could turn it into a nice little home for my girls and me. Quickly finishing my salad and putting my dishes in the dishwasher, I called out, "Girls, are you up for a little exploring?" Of course they were. Within seconds, we're all in the car and headed back to town. As we stepped into the space above the shop, I blew out a breath. "Wow," was all I could manage for a moment. A mess of dust, dirt, and spider webs. It was as bad as I remembered. I shook my head, wondering if there was any hope of it ever being livable. "I don't know, girls. What do you think?" I asked. "It sure needs a lot of work. An almost overwhelming amount of work. I wonder how many years it's been since anyone lived up here. I wonder." A loud rapping sound cut through my words. It took a moment for me to realize that someone was at the front door downstairs. I glanced at my watch. It had been a couple of hours since I'd closed the shop. Although there had been times when I'd been working late to put new shipments of yarns on the shelves or do paperwork, that I had opened the door to someone who was having a yarn emergency. Running out of yarn just before a project could be finished was not a good thing. Hurrying down the stairs, I was prepared to help whoever was in need of yarn or advice. As I was crossing the floor of the shop, though, I stopped dead in my tracks. I could see who was standing on the other side of the door, and it wasn't anyone in need of yarn. It was him, the man who had caused me so much grief that afternoon. Had he spotted my car parked out in front of the shop? Typical man, I thought. Determined that things were going to be his way, just because he said so. But as I said before, that was not the day for him to be tangling with me. I ducked down behind a display of yarn, hoping he wouldn't see me. I didn't say anything. I was hoping that he would just give up and walk away. He raised his hand, though, and knocked again. "Are you in there? Can we talk about this? I really would like to have my dog back." On hands and knees, I crawled my way around the edge of the shop to the front window, where at an angle I could see him, but he couldn't see me. I stared hard at him, wondering again if he was one of the dog nappers that had everyone in town on edge. He didn't look as though he could do such a thing, but then what was a dog napper supposed to look like? And the more I observed him, the shiftier he looked. As the seconds ticked by, I decided it wasn't at all difficult to imagine that he was up to no good. Again, he was rapping on the door. Still, I remained silent. I had no intention of having a conversation with him, nor was it my intention to open the door. His constant knocking was getting on my nerves, though, and the puppies were becoming agitated. They were woofing and growling at the commotion the man was making. "Just stop it," I yelled. "You need to go away. Just give me my dog and I will. As I said before, prove to me that she's yours. Otherwise, she stays with me. If you don't leave right now," I added, "I'm going to call the police. I think they would view what you're doing as harassment." "I'm not harassing you. I just want my dog." "Yeah, right." And of course he wanted Blanche, Rose, and Dorothy, too. I moved to the door to double-check the locks. Satisfied that they were in place, I walked to the back of the shop and up the stairs to the second floor. "Come on, girls," I called. "Let him stand out there and talk to himself. What a jerk." I paused at the top of the stairs, wondering for a moment if I would hear the sound of breaking glass. Would he try to break in? But I heard nothing more. He'd obviously given up and gone away. The girls couldn't seem to settle down. They paced the floor and were sticking to me like glue as I made my way through the rooms. I wondered if the man was still out there somewhere, if they could sense his presence. I rubbed away some of the dust and grime from the front window to look outside, and after a few seconds, I spotted him across the street, walking down the other end of town. His hands were shoved deep in his pockets, and he was shaking his head, but he kept moving. "It's okay, girls, he's gone," I told the puppies. "I guess he finally got the message that he can't mess with us." With a sigh of relief, I turned away from the window to finish my tour of the rooms. There were many years' worth of dirt and grime on everything. All the windows were covered with it too, making the space look dark and almost creepy. But it wasn't too difficult to imagine how it might look after a thorough cleaning, and a coat or two of paint might do wonders for the place. I felt my spirits rising. It had once been a home, and maybe it could be again. The living room was quite large, the three bedrooms adequate. The kitchen and bath would, when I could handle the expense, need to be gutted and redone, but until then we could get by, and there was a good-sized space behind the shop that with a little grass seed and a tree or two, could be a nice backyard for the girls. And no one would be telling me that I had too many dogs. "I can do this," I declared. "I don't watch all those home makeover shows on TV for nothing." I raced down the stairs to gather up cleaning supplies from the back of the shop. What better time to dig in than right that moment? I brought a radio up from the shop, too. Turning the music up loud, singing along with it, I got to work. The puppies were making me nervous, though. They were still pacing, still acting as though something was wrong. I talked to them, trying to soothe them, but I wasn't having much luck. I wondered if that man was back, if he was prowling around outside, looking for a way to get in, and my imagination began to go a little wild. I wondered if perhaps this part of the building was haunted. Were the puppies sensing something that I couldn't feel? Was that why no one had lived up here in years? Had something horrible happened up here? Were there unhappy spirits roaming through the rooms who didn't want anyone? Suddenly, I jumped as all four dogs began barking loudly. This was no longer whimpering or pacing. This was all-out serious barking. And then I heard it. He was obviously back, pounding again on the front door of the shop, so loudly that it sounded as though he was trying to knock the door in. I had had enough. Narrowing my eyes, I reached for my cell phone and then charged down the stairs. I was so angry. I know my eyes were shooting fire when I yanked the front door open. Did you see this? I held up my cell phone. Or do you see this? If you don't stop this harassment right this minute, I'm calling the police. I mean it. Go away. Leave me alone. Listen to me, please. So he was a dog napper with good manners. That didn't mean much. You listen to me, Buster. I'm counting to three. If you're still standing there, don't you hear the siren? At last, I did, and my eyes widened. It was the tornado siren, blown when a tornado had been sighted in the area. I had had the radio playing so loud upstairs, and my mind had been so busy with thoughts of yarn and puppies in our new home, and perhaps a ghost or two, that I hadn't been paying attention to anything outside the building. Everyone else in town was taking cover. Oh, everyone else in town has taken cover, it seems, but you, he was saying. The upstairs of your building is lit up like a Christmas tree. A shiver of panic slid across my shoulders as I became aware of the sky. It was black, the darkest I'd ever seen. A sky look during the early evening hours. Oh, I see. I didn't say it right. The darkest I'd ever seen a sky look during the early evening hours. The trees planted along the street were bent from the strong winds. As I stared out the door, I could see jagged streaks of lightning flashing in the distance. Hail was hitting the sidewalk with a terrible force. The other shop owners said this building doesn't have a basement. We need to get you out of here, the man was saying. A tornado was sighted a few miles outside town. We're gathering people in at the church down the street. Come on, my dogs. Quickly, he reached down and picked up two of the puppies. I grabbed the other two, closed the door behind us, and ran down the street beside the shifty man who had come to rescue us. The store owners who didn't have basements under their shops were gathered around a radio in the church basement, listening to the weather reports from the local station. Their faces were creased with worry. Welcoming hands reached for mine. Comforting arms went around me. No windows looked out on the street, so we had no idea what was happening to our town, our businesses. Some people were pacing, others sitting quietly, their eyes closed in prayer, huddling in a corner with my dogs. I prayed too. I apologized to God for not being in touch with him as often as I should be, and then I prayed that the tornado wouldn't touch down, that no one would be hurt, that he would spare our town from the devastating damage that a tornado can do in just minutes. I prayed that we would soon be allowed to go back to our lives as though these few minutes of terror hadn't happened. Someone told me that your name is Lori. A soft masculine voice broke into my prayers. I opened my eyes and looked up into the eyes of the man who had brought us to safety. I drew in a deep breath, not quite sure what to think about him or what to say. I'm Jim Harris, he said, stooping down to lay a gentle hand on my shoulder. I'm the new associate pastor here. My breath caught in my throat. I know my eyes grew as big as dinner plates. Not someone dangerous, not someone out to cause me grief, but a pastor. How foolish did I feel? I'm so sorry, I gasped, for all the awful things I was thinking about you and said to you. My goodness, I accused you of being a dog napper. His smile was warm and kind and forgiving. I guess your first impression of me wasn't a very good one. I'm sorry about that. I hope you'll let me explain. He reached for my hand. When you saw me earlier at the library, I got a call that one of my parishioners was dying. He was asking for me. He closed his eyes for a moment. I didn't make it to his house before he passed away. And when you saw me later, my neighbor had just called to tell me that Naomi had gotten out. I was hurrying home to try to find her. I squeezed his hand in compassion. I'm sorry for all you had to go through today. I smiled at him, and I'm glad you're not a dog napper. You really thought I was a dog napper? Shaking his head, he chuckled. I had lots of different jobs before being called into the ministry, but honestly, dog napping wasn't one of them. I laughed along with him, noticing again what gorgeous dark eyes he had. They were filled with kindness, and his smile was warm. Thank you for coming to get us. I had no idea that it was storming. I was busy. My words were interrupted by the sound of footsteps hurrying down the stairs. We all looked up. It's over, Tom Hansen, who owned the hardware store, was reporting. And we all must have been doing some powerful praying because it looks as if the damage is minor. Tomorrow it'll be business as usual for all of us. A chorus of voices shouted out, Thank you, Lord. I heard someone say, God is good. And someone else answered with, All the time. And then applause filled the basement. Jim helped me to my feet, and we gathered up the puppies. When we walked up the basement steps and stepped outside, I offered up a thank you of my own. All of the buildings, including my own, were still standing. Some shutters had been ripped off of some of the storefronts. Branches had been torn from trees. Leaves had been shredded, and the hail had broken some windows. But as the man had said, the damage was minor, and the biggest blessing of all was that no one had been hurt. When I returned to my shop, I had to wonder how differently things could have turned out if Jim hadn't come to get us. A tree limb had crashed through one of the windows in the space above the shop. In the living room where I'd been working, where the puppies had been pacing, there was glass everywhere, sharp, jagged pieces that could have cut deeply. I hurried back down the stairs to the shop to gather my girls close to me. Tears of gratitude were streaming down my face. You tried to tell me, didn't you? You were pacing and whimpering and trying to tell me that something was wrong, I said, swiping at my tears. I'm sorry I didn't realize what you were saying. Dogs are like that, a soft, masculine voice was saying from the front doorway. They often know what's going to happen long before we do. I smiled up at Jim. It seems that they're sometimes a lot smarter than their owners. He returned my smile. We just need to learn to listen. We need to learn to listen. These days, I am truly listening to my heart. While my head had been telling me for quite some time that there would never again be room in my life for another man, that didn't quite work out as planned. My heart overruled that notion, and every day I fall a little more in love with Jim. He's so kind, decent, and sweet, and he treats me with the utmost kindness and respect. I am so impressed and humbled by the work he does at the church. The people there love, trust, and respect him, and so do I. When he asked me if I thought I could be happy being a pastor's wife, with no hesitation, I said yes. He advised me to put the sale of my condo in God's hands, and I did just that. The result? The condo sold in less than a month for very close to the asking price. During those few weeks, as I began to get the space above the shop in livable order, the condo association agreed to overlook the fact that I had four animals living there with me. I even went over to Mr. Parker's condo to let him know that I was moving my dogs and myself into town. I think I went with a bit of an attitude, but guess what? I found a lonely old gentleman without family or friends, a gentleman who invited me in for tea and cookies, a gentleman who hugged me before I left and asked me to visit him again. I invited him to my wedding, and he did. Jim had told me that he had had many different jobs before going into the ministry. One of those jobs was construction work. Together, we worked to make the space above my shop a cozy, comfortable home for our dogs and us. and I'm pleased to tell you that we had to pay special attention to one of the bedrooms. A couple of months after we were married, we found out that our first child was on its way. We are so excited. Jim is going to be the greatest dad. Our child will be blessed to be his son or daughter. I have been welcomed into Jim's church family with open arms. Despite never going to church much, I am now finding the greatest joy in being involved in church activities. I volunteer whenever I can. We often host youth meetings and Bible studies in our apartment. I have a youth group, both girls and boys coming to the shop on Saturdays to learn to knit and crochet. The kids love to come to our place, partly, I think, because Blanche, Rose, Dorothy, and Naomi greet them so warmly. Yes, Naomi kept her original name, which means, of course, that I'm still keeping an eye out for my Sophia. One of these days, I'll find her. Okay, that's the end of that story, and I have some time, so I'm going to read a poem, finish this romance show with a poem. This one's from True Romance Magazine, written by Gordon Belcase, called Coming Home to You. Here's the poem. You give me everything you have to give each time we touch. You'd melt a heart of stone with tender things you do. You're everything I'll ever need. I want you oh so much. I'll always be coming home to you. In moonlight through the shadows, you outshine the stars above. No one else could be as beautiful as you. Believe me when I tell you, you're the only one I love. I'll always be coming home to you. In case you've ever wondered if I've slipped and made a friend who got lost in some love song she'd been listening to, no, I couldn't take the hell of having heaven with you end. I'll always be coming home to you. Okay, well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Romance Program. This has been Volunteer Jeannie Yost for the Sun Sounds reading to you. Thank you for listening. I'll have more stories next week. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.